Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
All right, guys, Greg Scheinman here. It is another week. It is another episode of the Midlife Male Podcast. My guest this week, Mick Batiski, also known as Just Mick. Really, if you're on Instagram, he's at Mick, M-I-C-K. Mick is a Brooklyn-based, multi-talented creative with influential footprints internationally. He is a DJ, style influencer, tech investor, inspirational speaker, music curator, and brand consultant. I got to know Mick in a really cool way. He actually heard me on Michael Chernow's Creatures of Habit podcast. He's actually an investor in Creatures of Habit. We talked a little bit about that. And he started following me, getting the newsletters on Sunday, writing me. I started writing him back, checked him out. Both of my sons were like, "Dad, this guy is super, super cool. Get him on the podcast." And here we are. And I don't just say it. My boys don't just say it. Forbes actually said Mick walks a tightrope between entertainer and entrepreneur. Vogue said he keeps the dance floor going all night. And Drake once said mixes were pivotal in his life. As a DJ, Mick has performed for clients such as LeBron James, Jay-Z, Michelle Obama, Prince, and Will Smith. His musical credits include remix projects with Adele, Busta Rhymes, DJ Jazzy Jeff, and Leon Bridges. And as an entrepreneur, Mick invests and consults with a wide array of startups and early stage companies, including Buzzer, Freestyle, the aforementioned Creatures of Habit, which I love, Quicknode, and Tiny Organics. On top of that, he is a husband and an awesome father and a super guy, and I truly enjoyed this conversation. So here we go with Mick on the Midlife Male Podcast.
That's right. So you have one kid?
I have two boys, 19 and 16. Yes.
Okay. So you have one at home and one at college.
Yeah. So actually, and now they're both home. My oldest one is on spring break. He just came home the other day. So I was just out there for some work and for an event, and then took him to the hockey game on Friday. He flew home on Saturday, and I just got back myself on Sunday from there.
Oh, that's fun. How must be like, my son's 7, going to be 8 in July. So I just feel like it must be so, like, he's already my best friend. He's been my best friend for the last couple of years, but like, it's just pretty inseparable now. And I just wonder how, I mean, we could probably even talk about this on the thing, but it's just like, as they become, not just like, I mean, I tell him all the time, you're not a little kid anymore. You're just a kid. He's like, "No, I'm a little kid." I'm like, "No, like, you don't act like a little." I mean, he does sometimes. They all still do, right? But like, he just like, you're not like a little kid anymore. You're just a kid, because then you're going to be a teenager, and then you're going to be like a young adult. And I just wonder, like, how much, I mean, do you feel like a friend to your kid more so than a dad at this point?
Like, yeah.
The smart friend.
So it's a great question. And it's really like, I find like this, it's tough. Like my dad was my best friend too. I always felt that way. I also think that there's this distinction for being like your friend, also like being your dad, which is cool. Like, that's all like the amazing fun stuff. Like, we're best friends. We can go to the hockey game. We can go, like, that's the dad stuff is awesome. Like, being your father is very different. You know, that's where the discipline comes in, and that's where like rules of engagement, and that's where doing my job, you know, of teaching you and holding you accountable. And that comes before being your friend. And I say the friend stuff is that's the bonus, you know?
Interesting. But I never differentiated between those two, but it makes a lot of sense.
That fatherhood is hard, like teaching you work ethic, teaching you responsibility. This morning, going into my son's room at 9:15 and going, you're late for work this morning. You work for me now. As of 9 o'clock this morning, you're home and you have responsibilities here. Like, just because I'm trying to teach him some things. You're in the business school, you know, you're on a scholarship for college, my scholarship. Things that my dad didn't get to teach me, that I was very entitled, you know, and didn't have any boundaries and didn't have any rules. And I think it cost me very dearly for a while. So like, I love all the stages, but I do wrestle and struggle with wanting to be their best friend, and am, and wanting them to feel the same way about me, but also making sure that, especially now, as a, like I say, for me, a slow learner and a late bloomer, like,
yeah,
what did I miss? What do I wish, like, somebody was around me telling me to do, keeping me honest, you know, steering me in the right direction, holding me accountable to make sure that they're successful adults.
I love that. Like, you know, again, I don't know if this is like, we're blowing this shit too soon before you start the podcast.
Hey, we're already going. You know, I'll just say that, like, I hit the button because, and for everyone out, like, I just hit the button because half the time, like, honestly, like, this is what fucking happens. You just get into these conversations with people and I out there, and guys, we don't really know each other. Like, this is the first time I'm seeing your face and first time we're really chatting. And we followed each other on IG and I see what you're doing, you know, with your son and your wife. And we feel like we know each other, but like, here's a unique opportunity to like, see what's in your room. Like the pictures on the wall behind you, like have a first conversation and really curious, like even like what's on your mind. So like, just go, man. I love this shit.
I mean, well, I could tell you, I started following you two reasons. One, I think, am I wrong? Did you have Michael Chernow on your podcast?
I did. And I've been on Michael's twice, both when he had Born or Made, and now he has Creatures of Habit. And you're in that, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. So my wife and I invested in Creatures of Habit. And that guy's a legend and a genius. And he just like, he's all the things all the time. It's really impressive how he lives his life. And my wife has a really big consumer products, like health food background too, but that beyond meat. Now she founded a company called Tiny Organics, which is really healthy baby food. We could talk about that later. But yeah, so I think what he's doing is fascinating. So I discovered you through him. But I also like see a lot of interesting people doing a lot of interesting podcasts all the time. They don't resonate me. But then when I like did a little deeper dive on you, aside from us being like middle-aged bald men with beards, and like, you know, like there's that whole thing. Like, it's just like, I don't know about you, but like when I'm walking down the street, like when I see a bald person, I kind of like look at them more than I look at like other people on the street, because they remind me of me. I'm like just a very boring, basic white man. I have nothing really distinguishable about me. And so like when I see a bald person, like that's pretty much the closest I could come to like the quote unquote, I hate this expression, finding my tribe. I hate those Instagram quotey expressions. But when I see a bald person, I'm like, oh, I see his glasses. Maybe that would look good on my head. Or, oh, I like how they did their beard. Like maybe that will work for me. Cause when you're bald, you have a whole other set of rules that you have to subscribe to aesthetically to pull shit off. Right. You have to have, you can't, if you have no glasses, which, and that, you know, you do, and your beard, you look crazy a lot of the time. So if you and you can't, your accessories are just like your accessories are you, because you don't have hair. So like, I'm like, oh, this guy's wearing this shirt. This looks cool with the bald head, or this beard, the way he had, like, cause some people do the beard if you're bald, but they mess it up by the ear. They try to like go too, like, it looks like a line. You got to fade it. You have to fade it or you look crazy. You look like two different people. And so I look at bald people and I'm always like, I get like advice or I feel better about myself, one or the other. They're saying like how they accessorize their baldness, because you have to do something or you look crazy.
So first of all, we're going to be fast friends, because it sounds like you think just like I do. Like I'm out there like picking stuff apart and looking for things, you know, and I talk a lot about, you know, what I call aggregate, curate, and eliminate, which is like aggregate from everything out there, you know, what, you know, people's different looks. And again, what they're putting on their bodies, what they're putting in their bodies, you know, what, how they're living their lives, aggregate it all, curate it down to what I think would work for me. And then kick out all the shit, you know, eliminate, you know, what doesn't. And you're right. I've always said like, look, I don't mind being bald. I do mind being overweight and bald. I do mind being bald with bad skin. You know, I do mind, like, what can I control? You know, control the controllables, you know, there. So I'm constantly looking at, you know, whether it's, okay, my eyes are puffy and I'm 50 years old and I'm bald. What can I do to fix my eye? What can I do to fix the puffiness right. in my eyes? Can I get more sleep? What skincare products can I use? You know, what barber am I going to who can create that better fade on my beard so I don't look, you know, like every other bald guy with a beard who's screwing it, you know, like there's guys that I think are messing it up, you know, out there. What can you do to be the best version of yourself, really, without right. using that cliche, but like, okay, you know, how do we use our time? How do we want to perceive, you know, how do we perceive ourselves? How do others perceive us? Like I see you, and I was listening to you speak, like I see you as very distinguishable, like from other guys out there. Like you've got a great personal style. You know, you found a great way to kind of build your brand, I think, aesthetically and through your work, and it all fits together. Like it works. So it's always right. interesting.
It took me a long time to get to that point, but like it's there now. And I appreciate, first of all, you for saying that. And you obviously, I feel like that same way about how you do your life and your business. But I it took a lot of trial and error to land on not just like what's the most authentic version of me, but more like how do I present that in a way that feels good to other people, but still authentic. It's not braggy, but it's not like fake humble. You know, there's a lot of minute details when you're a public person, and I'm not famous in any way, shape, or form, but I am a public person. And there's a huge difference between being famous and having to deal with all that shit, which I would never want to deal with, but also being a public person, which I have no choice to be because of my DJ career and the other things I'm working on, and trying to present yourself in a way that makes sense for your brand, but also makes sense for who you are as a person. And you know, like I see a lot of people mess that up all the time, and I mess that up sometimes, like we all do. But like I've at this point, like I just turned 45 last week. I just figured out how to like really just own exactly who I am. And that's the other reason I gravitated towards your entire world, was because when I turned 40, it didn't really bother me. 45 didn't bother me either, actually. But like when I turned 40, it seemed still like 39, you know, and it was pre-pandemic, and I was just about to get a divorce, and you know, all these things. And it just seemed like it was a different era of my life. And then 5 years later, I grew a lot in mature wise and emotionally, but I aged a lot physically too. When you go through a pandemic and a divorce and all these things, it took a huge toll on me mentally, physically, emotionally, like definitely, like I got a 15 pounds I'm still trying to lose. And, you know, I probably have more bags under my eyes than you would lose your fucking mind if you saw the bags under my eyes this morning. And all of these things, right? And it's just like, I just, now when I look at 45, I'm like, oh, this doesn't have to be, this is a great opportunity as a reset and as a rebirth. And rather than use it as a, wow, 45 is halfway to 50. I saw how you're living at 50, right? And I just was like, wow, this is proof, right? Maybe, and then I look at you also because you're bald. I'm like, yeah, I think I could be that guy. But like, there's proof that like there's life and there's happiness and there's joy and there's fitness at 50 that doesn't have to, that didn't exist at 40, and it doesn't currently exist at 45, but we're trending because I'm making all the right decisions, both consciously and unconsciously, to get myself there. And I remember, I think it was, I had to be, God, when it was probably 2016. My son was just born. So this was like 7 years. I was probably like 38. And I was pontificating. I don't know what that means. So I'm turning 40. And I did a podcast with this gentleman. I believe his name was Stu Friedman. He teaches at Wharton. And I was like basically being like, I don't want to be 40 one day. Like, I mean, obviously you want to be 40. If not, you're dead. But like I was having him the same, you know, like the same feelings I had at 45. And he was just like, bro, I'm in my 60s and it's my best shit ever. Like, it's like the best. I've had more success. I have more time with my family, more whatever, whatever. And I don't remember verbatim what he said, but that really was something I needed to hear. And it's funny how you hear the things you need to hear right when you need to hear them, right? And I was on there bitching, basically. And he said that, and that stuck with me tremendously. And I wonder where my first 5 years of my 40s would have been, considering how the world changed both for me and the globe during those 5 years, if I didn't have that sort of North Star. And you know, now I'm kind of like, I look at 45 to 50 as a review of my 40 to 45, but also just like, hopefully the best time of my life until I get to 50. And then, you know, following all your tips, so I can have a great 50.
Well, that's awesome. And I think it's what it's all about, man. I think it's about hope, And I think it's about possibility. And I think it's about probability of making and seeing our best days ahead of us based on, you said, the habits, the behaviors, the choices that we're making, the actions that we're taking, that just really extend our runway, increase our odds, use all the experiences that we've had to make the next phase the best phase. And as far as the numbers, I think you're spot on with that too. And I think, and so is Stu Friedman at Wharton, clearly, you know, over there, that I know some
smart guy. He's a very smart guy.
Yeah. I know, I say this all the time, and people ask me, you know, where is midlife and when does the crisis hit and all this go? Look, it depends. First of all, I know some really, really old 30-year-olds. And I know some super, super young 60-year-olds. Like I say this all the time. I do think it's a mindset. I do think it's in how we're carrying ourselves and how we're conducting ourselves and, excuse me, what type of attitude and perspective we bring to our lives. You know, at the same time, I used to think 47 was super, super old. That was the age that my dad passed away. And I talk about that a lot. And when you're a kid, your parents seem super old.
How old were you when your dad?
I was 17.
Okay.
And I have two younger brothers. So one was like 14, 15, and the other one was like 8, 9, like really young.
Okay.
Yeah? And that puts a lot, you know, in perspective. So I had a different upbringing for all intents and purposes, even than my brothers did. You know, I had my father around longer. You know, I was at a different age, a little bit older, a little bit more developed along. So we had a deeper relationship, even though, let's say, my youngest brother, who was 8, you know, had. And I think about that in terms of my two boys who are, again, now 16 and 19. And what have I prepared them for should something happen to me? And we touched on that a little bit there too, being their friend, but also how much do I need to cram in that you guys really need to know that I didn't get to know? Whether it's anything from shaving to how to tie a tie to the sex talks, to the drug talks, to the business and managing financing and understanding any of these things, because, you know, it's super important to have somebody to turn to have somebody to be there for you, to be not only the father figure, but the actual father, you know, that's there. Mm-hmm. And you can get led down all various different paths when you're searching for that type of a person and you don't really have them, you know, there.
Right. I see. I had my dad died maybe 5 years ago, but I didn't have a very close relationship with him. My parents never got divorced. They were together to the end. But we didn't have a close relationship until we never had a close relationship, but like we had a peer more, like we had more of a human relationship maybe the last 10 years of his life. Cause I was in my 30s and I was, you know, married and had a child on the way and then a child for a couple of the years of his end times. And it kind of became more like we could talk as like humans, but like he was just like the dad where he wasn't my best friend growing up. He was there. There was like, I've learned to like, I had a lot of animosity and a lot of just anxiety. And I would never say hatred, but like, cause when I look back on it as a provider, he definitely provided. And we weren't rich in any way, shape or form. We were very, very middle class, almost lower to middle class. So it was really interesting because my grandparents lived next door to us and they were upper middle class. They weren't like wealthy, but they were definitely like significantly head and shoulders above us, nice cars and like a place in Florida. And my parents would be like struggling. And as a kid, you don't realize how everybody conspired to make sure the kids were good. Myself and my sister, my first bike came from my grandparents, but like I probably learned how to ride it from my parents, or like, you know, my college was helped by my grandparents, or my drum set in high school was by grandparents. But, you know, my mom still worked hard enough to pay for the drum lesson. So like everybody kind of like united to like make sure I didn't never feel that, which I thought was beautiful. But like in retrospect, him and I though, like we didn't have any closeness growing up. And as a man who has to work very hard to provide for my family, as well as let's call it the divorce tax that the government throws on you for X amount of years. You know, it's a plus a pandemic all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It put a new perspective on how hard my dad worked as a provider, even though we didn't go to baseball games or barely play basketball, or we never had a real talk ever. I don't know one real conversation I ever had with my dad. And he drank a lot and smoked, and he was not a good role model in those sort of ways, but he was a good role model in that, like, he never like cheated on my mom. He always came home, even though he went out and did things that I don't do. Like I drink. I don't go to a bar for 3 hours and drink. I have a glass of wine with my wife. This is a huge difference of how we consume, right? And so I held a lot of animosity for that because my grandpa taught me how to tie a tie. My dad didn't. My grandpa got me my first suit. My dad didn't. You know, all of these things. And I think about how that impacted me psychologically. But then I think about like the fact that if my dad didn't work as hard as he did so we could just have the baseline of what we had, none of those other things would have mattered. And it took me to really the end of his life and having my son and then going through what I've been through emotionally and mentally the last 5 years to really come to terms with acceptance for what he wasn't, but a huge appreciation for what he was. Because it's fucking hard to provide for a family. He was putting carpet and tile and floors in the middle of Ohio in the 80s and 90s. Like, you know, he didn't have a glamorous job where, you know, he wasn't like at Google, like being a, you know, product director flying around. Like he didn't have these cool jobs. He didn't have our lives. He just, and he had in his job, I realized in retrospect, his job destroyed his body. And then his brain and his emotions, you know, I don't know what happened when he was a kid, you know, anything like that, but like, I can just gather, just knowing that like how I feel after I take a red eye home to make sure I can walk my kid to school. Like, I know that like, I couldn't imagine what being on your knees all day on tile, cutting tile, slamming bricks into a wall, cutting your fingers, your knees are falling off. There were, you know, he didn't have that cool little thing you put on your knee all the time or whatever that's just called. Like, he didn't have that. He didn't have, I never seen it took aspirin. Like he didn't have any remedies or coping mechanisms from a health perspective to offset 40 years of torturing his body. So his coping mechanism turns out was smoking, which thankfully I've never smoked a thing, but like eating unhealthy. But some of that was also a product of his environment. You know, when you live in the Midwest in the 60s and 70s and 80s, a salad is not the salad we're eating in you know, cool ass Brooklyn for $30 at a restaurant. A salad is, you can your McDonald's hamburger is healthier than a salad he was probably eating at that time. And then the drinking and all of these other things. And I think if he didn't have those coping mechanisms, he didn't know about like therapy, or him and my mom didn't have deep talks, or to my knowledge. And, you know, he didn't have a peer group of people. And so his only coping mechanism to do what he had to do was to do that stuff, which unfortunately took him a little bit away from, a lot away from me and my sister, which, you know, also kind of taught me how to do the opposite for my son. So it all kind of like works out. But like, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think he sat there conscientiously and made this decision, but he was probably like, the decision he did make, whether he knew it or not, was like, do I provide and make sure we have a home and make sure we have food and make sure that, like, you know, everyone's in the house? Or do I, you know, what's the other option? There was no other option. And so I look back on that now, especially in my mid 40s, like with a lot more respect for that. And I would do it differently. But like, I have a lot more forgiveness and a lot more understanding and empathy. And I just understand the journey a lot more now. He didn't have tools. He didn't have pop. He couldn't listen to you, dude. Like, you know, he couldn't listen to do. He couldn't do any of these things, you know? I just think like, I get it now. And I just try to just be my version that's better than that for my son, so that when he will one day, and your sons will do the same thing, they will have issues and flaws with how we did stuff and we don't know. And then, you know, hopefully, I guess the goal, right, is like every generation to improve upon what the previous generation did, so you can get closer to that top of that pyramid. And you know, I don't think you ever do, because the world changes and the pyramid keeps moving. But as long as, you know, we evolve and try to like do a little bit better and use those as learning experiences, I think we turn out okay.
I've been learning about TRT for the past several years. And as someone who's consistent and disciplined with his health, physicals, blood work, I have seen my testosterone decrease annually throughout my 40s. And I am now in my 50s. Last year, I made the decision, along with my physician and my family, to go on TRT. I was lacking energy compared to where I used to be. I wasn't recovering the way I used to, wanted to, and needed to in order to maintain the lifestyle I live. I was stressed and I was anxiety-ridden and I was frustrated. And I have carefully tracked my progress throughout the past year. And after researching various options, providers, and services available, I transitioned to using Hone Health. And I feel like myself again. Now, I've discussed, considered, and looked at every stigma, stereotype, concern, issue, pro, con, positive, negative, connotation, reputation, and whatnot. And I'm sure that there are some that I have missed. And I am an open book here at Midlife Mail and with myself. And I will share my experience and my advice, thoughts and considerations with anyone who wants to hear it, learn from it, accept it, or ignore it. And for me, it's never been about getting jacked, winning any competitions, or getting ahead in any way other than in my everyday life. It is, though, about being the best husband, father, and provider I can be for as long as I can be, the way that I want to be. And I simply wanted to have my energy, acuity, focus, smile, and health back to where it was and where I expect it to be. And Hone has guided me and provided me with everything I have needed along the way. And because of this, I am proud to partner with Hone Health. I believe in the team, the service, the product, and the mission. And I believe in what Hone is doing every day, what they've done for me, and what they can do for other midlife males to help them live better, stronger, healthier, and happier lives. So if you're interested in learning more about Hone Health, go to honehealth.com/midlifemail. You can order your at-home test and consultation. So if you're interested in learning more about Hone Health, go to honehealth.com/midlifemail to order your at-home test and consultation and save $15. Yeah, I think so too. And I think there's so much there, and it's back to, again, you know, gaining perspective and wisdom and experience. And I love that you use the word, you know, acceptance, because all of us are just trying to figure it out. You know, I think my dad, you know, was too. I am also. I mean, the conversations that I'm having with my wife are changing at all these different stages of our marriage, of, you know, our personal lives, my professional life, you know, the ages and stages of our boys. And you don't know any of this shit going in, really. What kind of parent are you going to be like when you have a 19-year-old and a 60-year-old? You think I could have predicted that, you know, 22 years ago when I got married? Like what kind of, you know, mother she was going to be at all these stages, what I was going to be doing from the time I woke up in the morning to the time that I go to bed? No idea. You know, so we're constantly, as you're saying, I think, you know, trying to grow, trying to evolve, trying to do the best we possibly can with our roles and our responsibilities. And these choices are not black and white a lot of the time. And I talk a lot about making better choices, or better one or better two, and asking yourself these questions. You know, is it, you know, better for me to eat a healthy meal today again, or go through the drive-thru? You know, pretty obvious. But a lot of these other decisions and choices that we have to make throughout our days and throughout our lives are not as cut and dry and black and white. They may be a series of better one or two questions to get down to what you think is the best one again, you know, for you, to your point. Stay at work longer, you know, make more money, grind it out on your hands and knees doing this, or come watching you play ball, you know, or something, or get home for dinner. Maybe right. The difference between paying the rent, you know, or the mortgage, right. You know, or not. Not that we don't want to be present and be there. Mm-hmm. Choices, obligations, roles at different times. I grew up much like you, it sounds like. You know, I watched my father subsist on a steady diet, you know, of 2 to 3 packs of cigarettes a day. Poor eating. And drinking. They went pretty hard on the North Shore of Long Island in the 80s and 90s. You know, we did. And we were very privileged and very entitled. And that is what success looked like. Also, put the suit on, get in the nice car, go run a business. But I also think that stress, that anxiety, that keeping up, that comparison, you know, whoever the Joneses are seem to have everything. And certainly where we were, that's really hard. Probably hard to quit smoking then, right? Hard to quit drinking then. Try to, when you're really chasing. And we were on the lower end of the highest echelon. I say, like, where I grew up, there was nowhere to go but down. Nowhere to go but down. And we were on the lower end of the highest end. So it just fucked up my whole perspective, again, of what
really interesting
success looked like and what hardship looked like. We were on the lower end of the highest in the world. And then later on, I realized, well, wait a minute, after my dad passed away, well, now I can't fall off the floor. It can't get any lower than this. Right. So what do we do now? And it was kind of rebuilding from the high highs and the low lows to this notion that, you know, the middle really is the sweet spot. okay, and what does success really look like for me and the kind of family and life that I want to have? Where does that exist? It involves some running for a while, you know, getting out of New York, going to different places, you know, and realizing you can't escape no matter what. So you better get grounded on there and you better start figuring out. And it's now 200 plus conversations like the one we're having right now that helped me kind of like glean and pick and pull to, you know, hopefully kind of shape an identity and help others figure out a lot of the same stuff that we're trying to figure out and work through. And I'm fascinated by also how you got where you are. And I'd love to talk about that a little bit. You know, now you've touched a little bit on your upbringing, but was this like music and DJing and creativity? Like, was this always something you wanted to do? Were you in Cleveland? Were you in Ohio growing up? And then how did you get to the big city, like New York and everything?
So I'll give you the abbreviated version of it. But like, I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, which is a very, you know, blue collar town. A lot of like, there was like mafia there back in the day and steel mills. And then, you know, the steel mills all closed down. And I think like the mafia stays a little bit longer and makes a mess of whatever the steel mills didn't make a mess of. And then you have just like a blue collar town, right? And so that was kind of like our upbringing. We lived in the nice suburb of the blue collar town, but it was on the not as nice street as my grandparents. It was like, it was really weird. It was like my life has been full of so many like dualities that were just like, that I think shaped me. And again, it's all relative, right? My not nice street compared to the street next to it was nicer than the street that somebody else has, and that street's nicer. So it's all a comparison game that's not a fun game to play, because you never win the comparison game, because it's like you said, you're on like the lowest end of the highest thing. It's just like, there's always something worse or there's always something better, and you can apply that to literally anything in life, which I've realized in my old age, right? But so I've always just kind of like been able to see two sides of every equation because of like how I was raised, whether it was my grandparents and my parents economically, or it was like where we lived, or even it was like, it was funny, man. Like I never thought about it, but it's kind of funny. Like Youngstown is equidistant between Cleveland and Pittsburgh. And I'm not a football fan really at all. I watch the Super Bowl and I eat bad food with my son and it's awesome. But like, I've never been a diehard football fan, but like in our town, football was huge, but you were either a Browns fan or you were a Steelers fan, and because you were equidistant. So even that was split. Like we didn't have like, it wasn't like you live in, I don't know, like Evanston, Illinois, so you're going to become like a Bears fan, right? Like, it's just like, you just have to, everything was a split thing. And I kind of like went into my life thinking, oh, all right, well, cool. There's always going to be like two sides of everything. How do you navigate between different worlds, if you will? And so that subconsciously as an adult, I realized really, really helped me, because it would be like, even as I would, you know, code switch as a human, if I was around my parents' friends or around, you know, things like that, but then I'd be like on vacation with my grandparents, but it was just a drastically different world. And I'd have to wear like a jacket to dinner, and I didn't have a jacket in my parents' house, you know? And it was just like, I did in high school, but you know what I mean? Like talking to waiters, like, sir, may I please have this hamburger, versus like going through like an Arby's drive-thru. I learned how to act appropriately in different situations, and that's something that has stuck with me through, while still being me, which is the important thing to remember out of that, right? Because you don't want to be two different people. You want to be you, but you just want to like apply yourself to like where you're at authentically and appropriately without like patronizing or being a dick, right? And so then growing up, I loved music. My mom got me a turntable when I was in kindergarten. I got my son a turntable when he was in kindergarten too. So I had a little record collection and all that, and I had like Thriller and all this shit. And then I started like messing around on my grandparents' piano. Again, my grandma had a piano. Like, we didn't have anything like that. So I started teaching myself music on her piano. And then they got me a drum set when I was in middle school. And so I started playing drums. And so I started developing like a musical pedigree. And my mom had, for some reason, a really good record collection, but I never see her listen to it ever. But like, she had some like weird records that were awesome, and I could never figure out how those got into her collection. But I remember listening to them like, oh, so-and-so sampled this, or so-and-so sampled this. And again, if you asked her, like, I don't think she even knew she had these. I had no idea where they came from. I'd love to have figured that out. But that was right when like 90s hip hop was really developing, and it is an amazing creative force. And it was like, by all metrics, the most creative era of hip hop, or maybe even music in recorded music history, like just from just the evolution of like lyrics and groups and fashion and style and all these things that are still popular today, to obviously sampling. And sampling was such a different era with legal stuff back then. So you could sample the Beatles and Gershwin and all these random weird things, and then mix it with James Brown and mix it with Kraftwerk and mix it with spoken word and mix it. And so you would get, so when I figured this out, I was like, wait, all my friends like all these different genres of music, but I could listen to like De La Soul or Paul's Boutique or Tribe Called Quest or The Roots, and I could get all these genres of music in one thing. So I was fascinated by that. It was like very efficient. I could get 20 genres of music by listening to 3 Feet High and Rising. This is fantastic. And so I did. And so all that stuff shaped me. And I would come home and I would play my drums to it after school as practice to like learn rhythm, right? To take that back to school. And at that point, I started figuring out like, oh, DJing is pretty cool. And, you know, I remember like the first recorded piece of music I ever bought with my own money was Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince. He's the DJ, I'm the rapper. And Jeff is going on to be a mentor, a huge, great friend, just like a collaborator in a lot of projects. And I still have a cassette in my desk drawer because it reminds me of that day in fourth grade. But again, that was at my grandparents' house in Florida. So it's crazy how this stuff all kind of like intersects. Like if I didn't go there, maybe I never got it, right? And so that was the moment I was like, I'm going to teach myself how to DJ, because I was, drumming was starting to fall off for me, and DJing was like the love of 90s hip hop and hip hop. We didn't obviously want 90s hip hop, and 90s was just hip hop. It was really taking over for me, and the expression, and I loved the lyrics and the consciousness, and I loved listening to like Public Enemy and Ice Cube and hearing all these alternate viewpoints that I wasn't hearing in my own small town. And it really opened up my mind to how the world really is, not just what I was being told in my bubble, right? And so I just was changing and evolving as a man and learning things right at the time where you're most, you know, what's the word? Like receptive to like
new impressionable.
Ideas. Impressionable, yeah. In my late teens, right? 15, 16, 17 years old. And so I go to college and two things happened that changed the course of my life. One was that I realized I couldn't bring my drum set into a dorm room or I would have gotten murdered. So like I had a really bad condition Jordan rookie card. If it was mint, like 10 of 10, it would be worth like millions of dollars right now. Mine was not. I was a kid. I played it later. I'm like a wear your shoes guy. Like if I have shoes, I wear them. Except for that one pair of shoes. The only pair of shoes I don't wear is De La Soul Dunks, which is just because I think that I look at them as like an art piece, but it doesn't matter how much the shoe is. The shoe could be $10. The shoe could be $1,000. Like I'm wearing my shoes. And I played with my basketball cards. Nobody was like, and I read comic books and I read them and then I give them away. Like I don't just like store everything, right? I think you should use your things. Play my
record. It's so awesome that you say that, because I completely believe that. I am a play with your toys kind of guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like totally. I do it with shoes also, like tons, and I want to wear them. And now like my boys can wear the same, like we all can switch, like they're all the same size, you know, basically, yeah. Which is kind of funny. So like I'll find some of my Nikes upstairs, my Converse, and it's always about playing with your toys. And not to cut you off, I feel the same way about like clothing and like watches. Like my dad was even a watch guy, and I have a few watches and stuff. And people are like, oh, you're wearing that on the hike? Are you doing? I'm like, yeah, because like I want to give these to my boys one day, and I want them to know where they've been. Like this watch, you know, climbed the equivalent of Mount Everest. You know, this one like went over this waterfall. You know, this one like scuff them up.
The stories,
man. Like,
are what make the thing the thing.
It's the stories, you know? Exactly.
Hmm? And Jordan basketball card, literally, like that would it would have been a great story. I've never touched it and sold it for $1 million one day. But like the better story was to have touched it. Fell in love with basketball, which became a huge influence in my DJ career, and then sold it for $600 between my senior year and freshman year of college, and bought two shitty used turntables and taught myself how to DJ that summer so I can go into a dorm room and just take up the space of my desk instead of the space of the bed, which if it was bed or drum, I probably got to keep the bed. And so that was a very impactful thing. It was a constraint, right, that forced me into an opportunity, because like I had no choice if I wanted to keep my music thing going. And I don't think I ever thought about that from that perspective, so that's actually really interesting. But like, yeah, the only way I could keep my love for rhythm and music going was to, you know, quote unquote, fall victim to this constraint. But I wasn't a victim to it at all. It changed my life. And then the other thing And I often wonder, like, I think when we all look back on our lives, right, there's like, obviously people are like, well, I could have, I made a left when I could have went right and blah, blah, blah. And the expression's been said 1,000,000,000 times. For me, when I did the tour of my college, and I've talked about this a little bit, but it's fascinating to me. I didn't really know what college radio was. It was very important in the 90s and in the early 2000s, pre-internet, pre-blogs, pre-streaming, pre-playlist, blah, blah, blah. And you know, people who loved music were given their taste-making curation stuff from listening to college radio, like pre-internet, right? It was the end-all, be-all in most, both major metropolitan areas as well as like rural areas that had like more cool liberal schools, right? And so I didn't know what that was. And my tour guide, when I toured my college, which was just a small little Catholic school in the suburb of Cleveland, she made a left, and I saw the hallway with the radio station instead of making a right and showing me like the treadmills or the pool. And I was like 270 pounds at the time. Like, I didn't give a fuck about a pool. Like, you know, like but I was walking and the hallway was like dark. I don't know why it was dark that day. And the radio station was like, it looked old and there's records everywhere. And the light, there was like a light. It was beaming kind of like out from the radio station. And I was like, what is this? And there were like two dudes in there doing a show. They weren't even students. They were just community members or whatever. And they just looked like they knew their shit. They were probably playing some like progressive rock, like 10 levels below like Pink Floyd or something like that. You know, just like some deep stuff that I would, to this day, wouldn't even know what it is. But it just looked like this magical, mythical, even like world, right? And it felt like the visual version of how I felt when I was listening to music. I was like, oh, this must have been what it felt like when they were doing these things. And obviously different genre, but it just looked, I'd never seen anything visual to match the secret club that my brain was in musically. And I just remember saying to myself, and I probably said it to my mom, I want to do that. So I chose that school because I saw that. Right. And then I moved there and I pulled every card I could to get a show, like befriended everybody. I did a 20-minute show on Sunday morning. They said, we'll give you a 20-minute show on Sunday morning from 6 to 6:20. I'm like, that sucks. And that's how bad the show was. It was a Catholic school that they would make me play a show called The Jewish News at a Catholic school. And that's how I earned my show. They would be like, you could play your hip hop stuff for 20 minutes and then you got to play The Jewish News at a Catholic school. I have no idea what deal they struck to even play that there. And then I would sit there and play that. And then at 7 o'clock, I would go back to my dorm and sleep until like 10, like all college freshmen do. And I learned about paying dues and I learned about sacrificing, but then the show took off and pretty soon I had like a Friday night show, which was like, did really well. And that led to me getting on commercial radio and doing clubs. And that led to my whole career. Right. And there's like a lot of interesting journeys upon that, but when I look back at my life, I don't remember those. I don't remember how it felt to be on commercial radio. I don't remember how it felt to like do all these clubs. I remember doing them, but the things that stick with me were just those weird life opportunity moments of me seeing that station, me waking up 5:45 and putting on some sweatpants and going to do this show for 20 minutes. Who wants to do a show for 20 minutes? It was like, it might've been 30. It was like ridiculous, you know, like give me 2 hours or don't give me anything. But I was like, nope, I'm going to do it. And I don't think like in retrospect, a lot of people would have made that choice. And I'm grateful that somehow I had some work ethic in me distilled to like do that. Because when I look at my life has been an example of those type of things. Like you make your own luck, or you put you're also the beneficiary of like luck and God's plan and the universe and all that. But then you have to also take advantage of it when it's there. You can't just like be like, oh, there's all these great things happening to me. What, like, thank God. Like, no. You have to like do it. Like if I didn't want to wake up and put myself through that ringer every week for 6 months to do that show, I would have no career. We wouldn't be talking. I don't even know what I'd be doing. I'd still be in Ohio. And so I, as I look back on my life, those are the two things that always happen for me. And I think they happen for most people. They just don't realize it, which is like whatever the good luck things that happen to you that give you an opportunity to change your situation, you have to be like looking for them. And then you have to be more than willing to take advantage of them and put that work in and take advantage of them. And I've fucked that up a lot too, right? But like, I've also like I've also won with it more than I've messed it up. And it's like, that's why I'm grateful. And I look back at my life and I just see, sometimes I'm sitting by somebody on a plane and I know that they do something cool and that there's something we could do together. You can just feel it. And I'm talking to them and I don't know what it is. And sometimes I'm shy and I'm like, I don't want to talk to them. And I force myself to like find some talk, let's talk about your watch or your shoes or how bad the food is or whatever it is, because, you know, something cool can happen from that. And I just have to like learn, I've just learned to really take advantage of these serendipitous moments that have existed in life.
The Midlife Male podcast is brought to you in part by Human Improvement. Guys, as you know, I am extremely careful and conscious about what I put on my body and in my body. And when I find something that works, I stick to it. I have been trying out Human Improvement Protein for the last few months, and it has become my go-to everyday protein powder supplement, my exclusive everyday protein powder supplement. Why? Because it is the easiest to digest protein powder that I have found, and I have tried countless protein powders. Let me tell you something. There is not a shortage of protein powders on the market. So how do you cut through the clutter? How do you find the right one for you? Well, here's my criteria. I get a lot of protein through my everyday nutrition. I eat a considerable amount of meat. I really focus on real foods, and I supplement with protein powder. Supplement is in addition to what I am getting through my normal everyday nutrition, and I want to add and supplement a little bit more. I get 22 grams of organic protein from Human Improvement, 5 grams of healthy fiber, 0 grams of added sugar. The vanilla and the chocolate taste great, and most importantly for me, clean, easy to digest. So rather than that bloated, gassy, weighed down feeling that I get from most protein powders, with Human Improvement, I feel light, I feel satiated, I feel energized. It supports gut health, I'm building lean muscle, and it is a protein powder that actually makes me feel better. And I think it can do the same for you. So here's what you got to do. Go on over to buyhi.co. That's buyhi.co. You're going to get 15% off using promo code MIDLIFEMALE. Check it out. Human Improvement, the best midlife male approved protein powder out there. It's so good. You know, it's like you just brought it full circle from the very, very beginning of the conversation, even when we were talking about our kids, you know, about being their friend, you know, being their friend and being their dad and then being their father. Like, you ask me like why I do this, you know, right? And it's for conversations and moments that you just described, about experiences and about the journey and about looking back and going, okay, you know, those milestone moments that maybe don't, you know, add up, like the big stuff that you're doing now, but what do you think about? You think about the studio, you think about that left turn, you think about the 20-minute show. And that's work ethic, and that's grit, and that's perseverance, and that's the shit that you've got to do to make your own luck in a lot of ways, create these opportunities. And you have those choices, do it or don't, in there. And, you know, to me, like that's like where the root of all of this is. Again, any age or any stage, but it's like, you know, pick out a moment and be like, that's what I'm going to play for my kids. Like, guess what? You know, like you're a freshman in college right now. You can do anything. You can walk down any hallway and find something. But here's the other thing. You got to work at it. You got to be willing to take that 20-minute show, you know, in the morning. You got to be willing to play, you know, that Jewish thing that they agreed to or whatever in order to get there. And you got to really kind of combine what you own, that personal passion that you have with earning and learning that professional expertise also, you know, to get there. And that's like how it happens. And then frankly, that's how we can be best friends. You know, that's how we can share this. And that's how I can also hopefully be a good mentor, good father, and good father figure to you by sharing this stuff with you. Because it doesn't, I say all the time, like mediocrity happens by default. Maximization happens by design. Mediocrity is easy. But like, if you want to really live a maximized life, if you really want to be successful, you have to do that extra shit.
Yeah.
And you got to do it when nobody's watching or when nobody's listening. You know, nobody listened to the first, I don't know how many episodes I did. Nobody read anything I wrote for years. And by all metrics of society, like I was successful in other areas. And I was like, what's all this shit that he's doing like over here? It was like a tree falling in the woods. But eventually, like if you are consistent, if you are persistent and you keep getting better and you just keep showing up, it's hard to beat the guy that keeps showing up. People will start listening. People will start following. People will start helping also because you're there.
And I've also even had that happen for me where like I used to do, I don't do it as much anymore, but I used to do a lot of like mixtapes or just conceptual mixes of different artists and all sorts of crazy stuff. And even pre-digital, like back when people would put them on CD or whatever, which is a lot of how I was able to like fund my move from Cleveland to New York, but like, you know, tax-free probably, but you know, now it's like, I would do some stuff and I would go back and look at like the streams on like SoundCloud or Mixcloud and all these places people would put mixes. And, you know, I'd be like, the level of work and the level of effort that I put into this project does not at all equate with the number of people that have heard it and how frustrating that would be to me. But what I've also found is like, you know, sometimes it doesn't mean you need 10,000 or 100,000 or a million people to listen to something. You just need really like that one person who's the right person to listen to it. So sometimes somebody will sit there and listen to something that I forgot I even did 10 years ago that I like literally has been on SoundCloud for like 10 years. And they'll reach out to me for an event to go DJ or something just because they discovered me from looking up their favorite group or something and finding it. And they were, and then once they discover me and they realize they see everything I've done for the last 10 years past that, they're like, oh, this is totally the guy we should have for our thing. But it took something that failed, quote unquote, by my metrics, not by, you know, and not creatively failed, but like quantitatively failed. And it's still out there. And that's why I keep a lot of these old things up, even though some of them aren't even on brand with who I am now as a DJ or as all the other things I'm doing, because you just never really know when you do something that can connect. And that's my same approach with events. Like when I do a lot of events for brands as a DJ, there's two types of things I DJ. I DJ like a lot of things where like I'm there to make people dance and I'm in a position to make people dance and I'm playing dance music and I'm trying to make this person talk to them. And there's a lot of like, and I talk about this sometimes, there's a lot of creativity and curativity of the alchemy of making 1,000 different people all do the same thing. And that's why I have an MBA in marketing, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. I want to write a book on that because I just think my brain works really better than some CMO's brains because of just the things that I've seen and how I can connect dots from making those people do that. And we could talk about that if you want, but the thing I wanted to say was I also do a lot of events where maybe they don't make the gram, but like I'm there just strictly working with great brands or great people. And I'm just there, you know, providing background music for your happy hour or your cocktail party for your brand. And it could be in New York, it could be in Cannes, it could be at South by Southwest, it could be at CES or whatever. And it doesn't look like some cool thing that some 23-year-old DJ is doing on Instagram or on TikTok right now. But I could tell you, and there might be 40 people in that room, and I might not even be getting paid what I should be getting paid. But I could tell you that those 40 people in that room are all people that could change my life. And so like, I try to also put myself in those situations where like, let's zoom out and let's remove ego and let's remove rate and let's remove brand, meaning my brand, not the brands that I'm working with, and say, you want to put me in a room of 40 CEOs? And I just, all I got to do is play music and drink wine I could never afford. Like, let's do that. Because first of all, one of those 40 is going to hire me for something else. One of those other 40 is going to become my friend because he's going to think my job is cooler than his, even though he makes more money than one ever made. Like, and then on top of that, like great things happen when you put yourself in those situations. And the fact that I can get paid anything and get to play music I love and be around people who my life would have probably been that way if my creativity didn't spawn out the other way when I was in college, right? Like it's one of the biggest blessings that ever happened in my career. And as I've gotten older, right, so going back to like the midlife situation, I started to think like, how do I evolve this DJ career to the point that I can do it in my middle age? I don't want to be in clubs till 4 o'clock in the morning, health-wise, emotionally-wise, relationship-wise. I want to be able to take my kid to school. I want to be able to put them to bed, you know? So like, I mean, I'll do that stuff every now and again because it's important to dip your toe in. But like, it's so infrequent, right? And even then the level of comfortability has to be really strong for me. But like, for me, it was just like, how can I evolve my DJ career and still be me? And so for me, I found that working with great brands, doing parties for venture capitalists, doing parties for ad tech companies, doing parties for Adweek, you know, doing all these things, like put me in rooms with all the people that I would have been if I didn't do this, and let me create amazing relationships with these people as a human and as a friend and as a dad, right? Because I could really relate to them and they could really relate to me. The only difference is they're paying me and I'm cashing their check. But the other difference is, like, you know, I'm playing the music to make them happy and they're creating whatever they're creating to make the world happy. So we're all creating cool stuff and we're all creating good energy and good vibes in some way. It's just that my calling was to do that. And so when I started putting myself in those circles, and let's be real, there was definitely I went through a lot of trauma with that too, because, like, why am I not getting booked to do this thing that this 23-year-old kid's getting booked for? Mm. Why am I not getting booked to do this? Or why am I getting missed, passed on for these opportunities, right? And I really was pissed for a few years about that stuff. I was jealous and envious and all of these things. And because I'm a fucking 40-year-old dad that has pictures of my kid every other picture on my gram, like, why would you book me to DJ a Virgil shoe launch in Paris? Or I'm making this up, but, like, when you zoom out and really think about it, I wouldn't, because I'm not that dude, right? But it's just like, why would you book me to DJ Fashion Week? Or why would you book me to DJ at, like, a rave in Bushwick? Like, that's not who I am. But if you're the guy who runs, you know, like $1 trillion hedge fund, you look at me and be like, yo, this is the guy that I would have over my house. This is the guy I would hang out with. I'm going to book him, because, you know, and so it took me a lot of soul searching and depression and to get through that. But it's just like, once I got there, I was like, this is great. And then again, the opportunity is in the end of it, because then I started saying, oh, well, I could speak to these people, or I could consult with these people. And then I started doing angel investing and advising, because I was in these rooms where there was, like, deal flow happening. And I was like, what the fuck is deal flow? Like, I just know the records go this way, you know, like, it's just like, and I started thinking, but, like, when I look at my whole life, I designed myself for this without knowing it. I used DJing to pay for an MBA. I did all these things to, like, put myself in this position. Now it just took life to, like, catch up to put me in this opportunity to take advantage of it. And I don't even like the expression, like, take advantage of it, because I'm not taking advantage of a person or a thing. I'm just seizing the benefit of all the hard work that I put in for 20 years.
I think it's happening organically. You know, it's happening organically and it's happening authentically. You know, and as you say, yeah, you know, you step back and go, okay, I can be envious and I can be jealous and I can be competitive and I can be, you know, what I like to say is, you know, chasing authenticity where authenticity doesn't exist. It's fucking exhausting. Like, yeah, I'm not in competition with a 20 something or whatever. It's an interesting thing. And as you're talking, I love where life evolves and we gain in kind of maturity. And you talk about seeing things through different lenses, you know, which I was just talking about with Dave Meltzer before. Like, now you're starting to see things through the 40-year-old man lens, the 45-year-old man lens. And so, and we get the clients we deserve is what you're talking about also, and who we are. That's why they want you in that room. That's why they want you at those parties. That's why you're getting those opportunities, because you've created, and by design, what your map looks like, where you want to go. Like, now I am a husband. Now I am a father. You know, now my life thesis has changed a little bit from wanting to be out until 4 o'clock in the morning and to, again, taking my son out to school. So what kind of life do I need to design? What types of events? I don't have to give up what I'm doing. I can actually get better at it. Probably, yeah, earn more.
Yeah, you know? I'm way better now, talent-wise, putting myself in rooms that I'm supposed to be in versus me maybe 10 years ago, for sure, forcing myself into rooms that weren't, you know, authentically me or anything like that. Like, I'd much rather be the guy who's 100% supposed to be, you know, what's the square, peg round hole thing or whatever. Yeah. Like, I fit exactly where I am, both professionally, culturally, educationally, musically. Like, everything I'm doing now fits just exactly who I am. So I could show up and give people, I give you an amazing return on your value, because I'm exactly what you need for your thing, versus when I was trying to be like this guy in Vegas doing EDM shit. And it's just like, I'm on the plane looking at the songs, like, they all sound the same to me. I don't even know which ones I'm supposed to play. And I would just go play them. And thankfully they all do sound the same and they're all the same tempo. So it worked. But, like, you know, if you ask me, like, name 20 of those songs right now, I couldn't tell you. Now, granted, there are people that could, and that's, you know, just like they would look at what I say it's not the same. So there's obviously art and everything. But for me, that wasn't right. And so, like, I realized, like, don't put myself in those situations.
Just well, I think that's just it. That's what you learn. Anytime I think that you sacrifice, you know, who you are, or anytime you try to conform or fit that square peg into a round hole, you're going to set yourself up for some disappointment. You know, like you may get, you know, you may get a good, you know, monetary return, but it doesn't feel like you're getting a good return on life. And it also doesn't right. seem sustainable, and it doesn't seem right. like something you want to do more of. It ends up kind of draining you and emptying your tank, you know, rather than filling it. And it's just like a conversation, you know, or, you know, it could be anything, whatever your vocation is to anybody who's listening. It could be the wrong coaching client. It could be the wrong DJ client. It could be the wrong podcast guest. It could be the, either it's, you know, we all go for that feeling. You know, like, you know when it feels right, and you know when right. it feels you. And if you continue to gravitate and pay attention to that, you know, I say test and retest and take your temperature. Like, if you keep gravitating towards the shit that feels really good and feels right, you will ultimately, again, be more successful. Those clients understand. You know, my clients understand when they see me in workout gear, it's not a surprise that I finished a workout and then I jump on a call with them. Mm-hmm. It's not a surprise that you take your son to school. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's who you are. So the kind of clients that reach out to you and relate to you and what you want to play. And I think the same thing, it all comes back to, you know, living your message and being yourself. And that creates like real momentum and I think positivity. And more people like that want to jump on board and want to help.
Yeah. I had a client last week. I was in Vegas for Adobe Summit. They do like this big thing every year, and I've done it for them for several years. And they're just an awesome client to have. And I really love and appreciate them so much. But like, my set ended at maybe 9. And then they had a performer. They had Rev Run, and they had like Macklemore. They always get these people, like they had like the Killers. Like, they always get like a big thing, right? And I was like, oh, I'm only doing 7 to 9, which is great. I made a lot of great connections, played a lot of great music, had a lot of great fun. And then I was like, I had my flight was booked for like 7 in the morning. And see, the thing is, like, people don't know this often from looking at my Instagram, but I only have my son half the week. So, you know, I have him every other day. I set it up with like basic intent. So like there's like, there's very few days I don't actually have eyes on him or hands on him at some point of the day. And Saturdays are the only days really, like, for the most part, that he's not with me at all in the 24-hour period, because if I pick him up from school like on a Monday, and I pick him up from school like on a Tuesday, like I see him Monday afternoon and night, and I see him Tuesday morning, and then I pick him up Wednesday afternoon. So, you know, so like, I, there's, again, it's very rarely that there's a 24-hour period where him and I are not in proximity, which is amazing for me and him. It's amazing for our emotions and our soul and parenting. But, you know, still, that being said, there's only like 3 nights 1 week 4 the next week where he is with me. And so I try to, like, but you can't tell a client, like, hey, move your event, right? So what I try to do is just, it's imperative to me that if there's a way I can be there, you know, and sometimes there's not, and you just gotta, like, it is what it is. And my wife is incredible, and him and my wife are best friends, and they want to, like, I could FaceTime 24/7 and just, like, you know, it's great. So when I have to go like to Cannes Lions for a week, I miss him, but like, he has more fun with her than he has with me anyway. So like, he's great. He's like, you could stay, it's all good. Bring me back a toy, I'm good, bro. We're making burritos. He has a great life. But like, for me, it's just like, I will move mountains to have that quality time with him. And I, you know, my clients appreciate that and understand that. So like, once my work was done and there was no more work, I was like, oh wait, it's only 9. I thought I was playing later. There was like a 10 o'clock red eye, right? I just was like, I'm out. Like, are you sure you don't need anything after the headliners? And they're like, nope, we're all good. It's a hard stop at 12 at midnight. And I'm like, you sure? They're like, 1,000%. I was like, thank you so much. I will see you next year. Really appreciate you guys. Thank you. Love you. And I'm out. And I switched my flight to the 10 o'clock and I was home in the morning. And it's the same thing I think they think it's a little crazy, but I think they appreciate it because they are all parents and they're all adults. And I was at, I'll say one thing. Thankfully it worked out good, but it could have been the other way. But just the relationship that I have with my client, I was at South By a few weeks ago, South By Southwest, and I had 2 or 3 events every single day. And one of the things were an afternoon event I was doing for Roku. And I did 3 events for them over the course of that weekend. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, as well as I had like a bunch of nighttime parties and things of that nature too. It was a crazy, crazy time for me. But what people didn't see on Instagram was Friday night, my son, he has eczema, and he scratched himself into a It's not severe eczema, but if he goes nuts, it can be. And he scratched himself into a skin infection. And he had all these like it just, his hands were inflamed and it was crazy. And the pediatrician said, you have to go to the ER. And so his mom and my wife, they like kind of got him all situated in the hospital for the whole weekend. But like, we didn't know what was going on Friday night and Saturday morning. He wasn't normal again until like Saturday afternoon. And he didn't even get to come home until Sunday night. He was there for 2.5 days. His first time in the hospital since he came out of the hospital. And thankfully, our family's always been pretty healthy. None of us have extensive experience in hospitals, which is a blessing, you know? And I don't think that will hold forever, but like it certainly didn't hold, right? Because it just happened. But I'm finding this out while I'm DJing. I'm freaking out, you know, trying to like perform and put on this good show. And I'm just, he's, you know, I talked to him on FaceTime and he's like out of it. They're in the ER and it's rough, right? And so I literally told the client, I was like, listen, I can't make your afternoon happy hour thing that I'm supposed to DJ on Saturday. I did your Friday one. I'll come back for the Sunday one, but I got to go to the hospital. So like, I literally left the party, grabbed my luggage, took a 6 a.m. flight back to New York, Ubered to the hospital, spent 6 hours with him. He was thankfully fine by then. We had lunch, you know, and all that. And then went back to the airport, took a 6 p.m. flight back, landed in Austin, and went literally right to the stage at my other event, and I'm just like so grateful. Like the client was like, I get it. Go do what you have to do. You know, they weren't like, there's definitely worlds where if you don't have that rapport and that respect and that sort of like, you know, congeniality that we've built up as humans, right? And as parents and as adults and as just just society where they could be like, I get it. We're never going to use you again. Cause you're like, you're fucking us royally for this happy hour or, you know, and it's just, you know, and I know, and that's crazy to me to think that, but like, I was willing to like risk that because I didn't know at that moment how it was going to go with him. And thankfully everything worked out fine. But, you know, I wouldn't, if he got worse, I what's that money worth? Zero at the end of the day. Right. And so I zoomed out on that on the plane back to Austin. I was like so grateful that A, I was able to like get there and be there for him, but also like that the client was like, when I showed up Sunday, they're just like, how is he? You need anything else? Like texting me, like, you know, it was just like, and that's because I treat my clients and I treat my relationships like human beings, right? And this was like the most touching, you know, crazy experience I've ever went through as far as travel logistics, parenting logistics, just trying to be there. And it had nothing to do with me. It was about making sure he was good and he was comfortable. And he just saw me and he knew I was there for him. And selfishly, it was just as much about me seeing him with my own eyes and knowing that he's good. And knowing that, you know, he's sitting there with IVs in his arm and all sorts of crazy stuff, but we're gonna have like burritos and we're going to play Mario Super Smash Brothers and we're going to do all of these things because like, you know, it was a life-changing moment for me to like what you'll actually do for your kid. And also I hope, you know, he appreciates it, but more so like, I was just so grateful that the client was like so respectful and like, you know, cause I think a lot of people, I was lucky, man. Like I realized how blessed I am. Like, you know how many people in the world would not even be able to do that? They'd get fired. They might not even be able to even provide for that same kid for an entire month if they try to do what I did. And I was just zooming out on that entire story. It's just like 30 levels of being grateful at the whole thing. Every part of that I'm grateful for.
Mm. Well, one, I'm glad that he's okay. That's first and foremost. And there's just so much to the story. You know, I always say like rule number one, knowing what's important is what's most important. And for me, you know, that's family in my order of my 6 F's, and I've got a whole book about it. It's family is number one. Family, fitness, finance, food, fashion, fun. You know, like however, but you also have to live your message. If I'm going to put family number one, and you don't make decisions like the one that you're talking about right there, you're just a hypocrite in a way.
Right.
Like, you know, like, and I think a lot of what you're talking about is relating to one, you're a professional. Mm-hmm. You know, when you turn pro and whoever you are out there, like I talk about, you know, turning pro. It's a great book. If you haven't read it, Pressfield's Turning Pro. It's amazing out there. You're a professional. You also have your priorities in order, but you're professional in life the same way you are in your vocation, in your career. And when you treat people like human beings and you approach them like a professional, there's typically a greater degree of understanding. I also believe I'll only speak for myself. If it was me in the situation making the same decision, regardless of whether the client is understanding or not, it's not changing the decision.
Right, it's not.
Now, I also think there's a tremendous amount of respect that develops. The client answers you and responds a certain way, is empathetic, sympathetic. You fly back to Austin the following day. It's kind of like, listen, I don't care how long you want me to play. I'll play. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like we've deepened this relationship. It's transcended the contract. You know, there's a greater level of understanding, you know, and human connection that's there. Mm-hmm. And that's who you want to work for. That's who you want to give yourself to. And these situations do not happen often, fortunately. But I also say these situations, you know, and these situations and circumstances, they either defeat us or they define us. Now, it defined you as a dad. It defined you as a professional. It could have gone the other way. There could have been regret. It could have been deflating. It could have been, oh, you know, the easier choice, quite frankly, is I'm here. Yeah. I'm under contract. I'm playing. Like, you guys got it locked down. We're faced with this stuff all the time. And I think it's important to point out, like, hey, how we make decisions and the choices we make and the actions we take kind of really define who we are, whatever we do, you know, like, and it's a great look. I'm glad it worked out in all areas. You know? Played, totally. Left, got back. He's healthy, all of that. But I also don't think that, and we're like, that's an accident, you know, either. You know? Again, I think all these things add up. You know, I think they do create momentum. I think they do create karma. They do create all of these things, you know, add up. And that's, again, why opportunities present themselves. You know, that's why, you know, success looks a different way for you now at 45. You know,
yeah.
It did at 20 and 30 and it will at 50. You know, again, just like it is for me, it's similar. As you're telling that story, I'm thinking about, you know, just Colorado and Denver, you know, last week, you know, flew to... You know, one, I was in New York. I had gigs in New York. I was speaking for a group there, and then it was New York, and then it was for a big YPO group, and then it was...
Yeah, we swapped states for that time.
We swapped states, exactly. You were heading down to South By, and I'm in New York, and it was three whirlwind days. One, took my wife. It was a choice, you know? And kind of, come with me. Let's have a little fun. I'm going to be working, but you can have fun, and we can spend a little time together, you know, and I watch you there from a confidence standpoint, but speak to a big room full of amazing entrepreneurs and professionals. And the next day I got 20 guys, you know, that are in midlife and we're leading them through a full day. And the following day, it's a room full of middle-aged women, you know, in New Jersey. And then it's hop a plane. And I wasn't going to go on spring break initially, you know, with my wife and my younger son. We wanted to go to Miami and he's into everything. You're in like design and fashion and blah. And I was like, you know what? I'm tired, but I'm going to go anyway. You know, to your point, like, here's an experience we get to spend, you know, together, you know, down there. And then it's pack a different bag and head to Colorado and speak there. And then I'm doing this event. And as you were talking about, so I'm going to skip dinner with the 30 guys at this event on Friday, because my son can come to Denver and I can take him to a hockey game and we can hang out. Like, to me, like, just in the way my kind of thesis is, that's what high performance lifestyle looks like. You can go hard in the paint all day. You can do your job and be a pro. But if you have a choice between, let's say, family, and there's something, you make that choice. So I got a little less sleep in there, but I got to do something that we'll never forget.
Right.
And yeah, I didn't perform super well at the workout or whatever the next day, but who gives a shit?
Because you have another 364 of those this year. So you're good. You can't replace the whole thing you just did.
Exactly. That's an Avs home game with my son, right when he's leaving on spring break, our time together, one-on-one, like, you make memories, you make moments, you make experiences. And you, that's how you choose. Perfect your morning routine with AG1 by Athletic Greens. That is how I start my day each and every day. Now, I get asked about my morning routine all the time, and it does change from time to time, but AG1 has been the constant since 2010 for me. Every morning, 20 ounces of water, one scoop of AG1 to start my day on a positive note. It has replaced an entire cabinet of supplements for me. And this latest iteration, that's the thing I love about AG1, is they keep making the product better. This latest iteration covers a multivitamin, multimineral, prebiotics, probiotics, adaptogens, greens, and more. So I feel healthy and strong throughout the days, months, and years. When I'm traveling, I never leave home without their travel packs. And now, Athletic Greens is offering Midlife Male listeners and subscribers an exclusive deal. You get a free one-year supply of liquid vitamin D plus five travel packs with your subscription purchase. So log on, take advantage of it, and enjoy Athletic Greens AG1 every single day.
I have an event tomorrow that I actually feel like I got because of my son. Not tomorrow, I'm sorry, Thursday. Like, I got an email a couple of weeks ago, like, you know, are you available in New York on, I don't know, whatever. Doesn't matter what the date says, who knows what it is. And I was like, I'm available. And they're like, great. It's for, like, you know, this big, big party for this, you know, this movie that's coming out. It's going to be like all these amazing people in the room. You know, it's a huge movie. Do you want to do the New York launch event for this? And I'm just like, absolutely. I don't know what the movie is. I just know that the check is good. It's actually in Brooklyn where I live. I could city bike if I wanted to. Like, I wouldn't because I'd be sweaty. But, like, you know, it fit all. Like, it was just great. Because it's adult day. I have my kid. I'm like, this is great. I could still, like, hang out with him before and after. And everything about it was great. I'm like, what's the movie? And they're like, oh, it's the Super Mario movie. And I was like, you have to be fucking kidding me. And then, like, I'm literally, like, you know, sending them like pictures. They're like, we know, we see your Instagram. Like, your kid plays Mario all the time. He was Mario for how, you know, he went to Comic-Con dressed like Mario, like all these things. And I was like, I'm totally bringing him for soundcheck and I'm bringing him for like all these things. They're like, bring him. And so like, I'm just like laughing because like, I'm almost positive that like, he was responsible for at least, let's say for tax purposes, 49% of me getting that gig, because half my Instagram stories are him and my wife playing Super Smash Brothers or him doing some sort of Mario adjacent thing. And it's just like, and then when I told him I'm doing the party, he's like freaking out. He's like so excited. He's like, can I come? And I'm like, yeah. And like, you know, from a career perspective, I'm looking at it like I'm doing a party for like, you know, Universal Studios. It's a great client to add to the list. It's going to be great people in the room, lots of like execs and influencers, blah, blah, blah. But also from a parent perspective, I'm literally doing a party for the movie my son's waited 2 years to see for his favorite character of all time. And he gets to come. But like, how divine is that, where all these things could like work together and land in one thing? And we've never been more excited for an event.
It's also, again, because, which is amazing, but it's because, again, you'd have other, you need choices. I could not, let's say, put my relationship with my son, whether it's on Instagram or anywhere else, or talk, because I think it might hurt my career, or it might do that, you know, or I'll lose gigs to the 20-something-year-old or whatever it might be. Or you can embrace exactly where you are in life, what's most important to you, and see what other opportunities come from it. You know, again, it's not dissimilar. I mean, we can geek out on this stuff, you know, a lot, and it's because it's really cool and it's actually really, really true. But it's the same thing as I think even when you and I first connected, like I pulled all your stuff up and I'm like, Harper, check this out. Like, I'm talking to Mick. Like, look at this guy and look at how he dresses and look what he did. And you're doing all this stuff that like my son is like super interested in. And he's like, oh, that's like really cool. He's like, how did he find you or whatever? When are you going to be talking to him? And these things kind of, again, they happen. You talked about even like Chernow and Creatures of Habit at the top of the hour, like getting on cap tables with these guys, getting investment opportunities, looking like, I know what Mike is up there doing in upstate New York, you know, with his wife and with his kids and living a certain way. That's who you want to surround yourself with. And you're right. Okay, like, how do I partake? How do I contribute? How can I maybe add value? You know, how can I help you guys out? Whatever it may be, because again, we're all just trying, I think, to do the best we can the way we really want to. And the less we have to, you know, really try to or do things that we don't want to do with people we don't want to do them with, and the more we can do things the way we want to, with people right. We really want to, the right way, like, the better, again, this next phase of life, or all phases of life, are going to be. You know, I go back to like, when am I happy? When am I unhappy? You know, what feels like work? What feels like it's energizing? You know, and where's the profit come from? You know, not just like monetarily, but like holistically in all of these different areas. And every time I've been more vulnerable, every time I've been more real, you know, more than time I've said yes for the right reasons to the right things and no, you know, for the right reason for the wrong, better things have happened. You just draw the line down the middle of the page and it's quantifiable. Like, it really is over a series of time. Really is. It's great stuff.
You just see it. I think now as I've moving into like my next phase of life, it's taking everything you just said and like zooming out on that and figuring out, you kind of just said it, like, that's kind of our theory with investing and advising for companies. Like, you know, I can't change your life with my investment in any way, shape, or form, but I could give you some money, and I could also give you my brain and my connections, and also my wife, who's a significantly smarter than me and a super dope founder. Like, you get her too, so you get a 2-for-1. So like, the value that we can add and our strengths are completely opposite and compatible. So like, you get a lot when you get up, but it's only because of the journey that we led. And so, you know, I'm grateful for like that kind of like, you know, second career that's happened for me. And I'm also grateful for like putting those things together allowed me to do speaking stuff. And I realized, like, you know, you mentioned creativity earlier, like my whole life happened because of creativity stuff and figuring out how to like make creativity work for me, whether it was drums or whether it was DJing or whether it was, you know, just like any of these situations. And having been, like I said at the beginning, of like always seeing like two sides of it based on how my upbringing was, right? It was just like, I know that the stuff I've seen and the experiences I've had as a DJ or as a creative, I'm trying to like zoom out on always defining what I do as a DJ, because like the creativity has applied itself at all my verticals, right? What I'm doing as a creative person, as a creative business person, I think there's an opportunity to like help all business people and all people trying to find themselves. I don't need to go give a talk to a bunch of DJs. I could do that, but I'd rather do a talk with a bunch of people who just need to be creatively inspired, because I think it's hilarious that people with billion-dollar companies get on an elevator and there's one floor for the creatives and they have IMAX and foosball tables and all this stuff. And then the people who do finance and the people who do operations and the people who do everything else, they get on a floor with Windows computers and no windows on the wall though, right? Like they get the shitty cubicles and everything bad, and then but the creative, you're almost told who you are when you walk into these companies. Oh, you're a creative, so you get all the cool stuff. And you're not a creative, but the creatives don't get paid without the finance guys, and the creatives don't get paid without the operations guys, and vice versa. And the creative guys have nothing to do without those guys. So let's stop. And as a DJ, I felt pigeonholed so many times, and I thought about like, what is it like for these guys to feel? And when I say guys, I don't mean like men. I just mean, you know, generically guys. just to be clear, what would it be like to walk into some place that you maybe want to be, maybe you don't want to be, and to be told who you are before you even start working for somebody else for that day? And as a person that's been pigeonholed as a creative, or like when I was in grad school, and this is a huge part of my origin story. This was my Spider-Man like great responsibility quote. Mine is, when I was in grad school, the teacher was like, you can't be creative or you can't be in business. You can't be both of those. You need to choose one. And it was like the most powerful quote anybody ever gave me, because it was utter bullshit. And to be fair, it was like 2004 or something. Like, that was a different world, you know, but like still utter bullshit. And I walked out of there and I was like, that's like, you know, there's like the Michael Jordan getting cut from basketball and the Spider-Man thing. Like I said, like, it's that for me. I was like, that's just not going to be how my life goes. And then here we are. Not just am I successful on both sides of those of that fence, thankfully, but like the world is evolved to the point where like creativity and creatives are the genesis of all the stuff that we're looking at. And so I just think, like, as I've been thankfully a beneficiary of the genes that exist in my body creatively to be able to do all these things, like, how can we help the other people who need to spark that? And so I think that's going to be a huge part of my journey now, man. It's like, you know, talking about how the creative stuff I've seen and the creative stuff I've been around can really just inspire other people. People are like, you need to write a book about DJ. Why would I do that? I want to write a book that can inspire the CMO that just hired me. I want to go talk to like, you know, the whole new, you know, group of people that you just hired about how I see creativity and how I can. Like I mentioned earlier, like DJing is fascinating when you do it right, because it's the ultimate consumer behavior study. When I got to make this woman from Alaska dance with this guy from France, next to this woman from Senegal, next to this guy from the Bronx, all different ages, all different backgrounds, all different career levels, and I have to make you all do the same thing. It's a very powerful thing, very godlike moment. And I don't mean like trying to be God, but it's a very like, it's the closest that I'll ever get to having that much power. And it's not power in the real world where that can like change people's lives, but at that moment, just to be able to like, and so there's a mental approach that goes to that, but there's an emotional approach to it also, because I have to think about how I'm going to pull this off, but emotionally I have to connect with what I'm playing, and I have to make you emotionally connect to the vibe I'm playing and the next song and the venue and all of these things to make all that happen. And then when it does happen, and it usually does happen, that's when I feel like I did my job. And so I just think, like, would I be as good at that if I didn't have a marketing background? Like, I think about my life as a whole, and I'm just like, man, what CMO wouldn't want to figure out how to take, you know, like 20 different demographics of people and sell them all the same diapers?
Well, that's what you do, is you're able to now take this step back, you said, and look at the big picture and go, okay, what has my experience taught me? You know, what am I really, you know, where's the real value? What do I want to talk about? What do I want to write about? You know, what's really exciting here and what's needed from all the things that you've done? Like, okay, yeah, like I could write a book about DJing, but really it's so much bigger than that. You know, what we're really talking about, you know, these cultural shifts, you know, that being able to look at these rooms and get people to do different things and feelings and how we run businesses and organizations and human behavior and all of these things that are there. It's so much bigger. And you just use your art and your creativity to continue to learn, you know, motivate, inspire, bring people together. And now you can step back and look at it from, you know, 30,000 feet and like, okay, how do we really change lives? How do we really change organizations? How do we really, you know, move the needle? And that's amazing on that macro level, you know, and to have that vision and the book's going to be awesome. I just already know it, you know, and it'll get in there. I'm also curious and we kind of wrap this up. Like, what does tomorrow look like too? Like, what is just, hey, as you're thinking about all these big and amazing things, and I've looked at your agendas and you've set this up, and you're in Atlanta and you're doing a thing at Prada and you're doing a thing, you know, in South By, and you've got Mario Brothers premieres and all this, but like, what is just like tomorrow look like, you know, morning, afternoon, you know, evening, what's typical McDay?
I mean, tomorrow's like, you know, I wake up, I've got a good home fitness situation. I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of inspired by how you did your stuff. So like, we have like a Tonal, and we shout out to Tonal, by the way, we work with them, and, you know, like a rower and a bunch of like things that are just like, in a bike. I made fitness a huge priority for myself every day, which I hadn't done. And, I've kind of given up on that. First of all, I'm zooming out on your question, but like, this is something that you've inspired in me from watching your journey for the last 6 months that I followed it, is like, I used to make it like never made it a non-negotiable. And I used to make it an outcome-based result thing only, not in the moment, in the flow thing. And, you know, I grew up a fat, really fat kid. And then I lost a lot of weight in college, and then I gained it all back. And I would go from 190 to 270 to 200 to 240 to, you know, whatever. And my whole adult life. And then when I was 30 and I moved to New York, I was able to get myself from 250 to 240 to 220 to 290. And then right around when my kid was born, I was like 190. It was the fittest I ever been. And then now I'm a little bit past that again, because, you know, depression and divorce and pandemic are very real things that human beings go through. But as I'm working on getting that back down, and thankfully it's going back down, my wife is like, greatest human being I've ever met. Like, she just like tells me all the time, like, zoom out, man. Because like, you wake up every day and like, I wake up in the morning and like, I'm thirsty. I don't drink any water because I want to weigh myself first, right? I want to use the bathroom before I even weigh myself. And she's like, you're a fucking idiot. Drink some water. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, what did, if you weigh yourself on a scale and it says 212.4, you feel good because you were 213 yesterday. But you're going to go drink that water and it's going to say 213 anyway. She's like, it's only water. You should be drinking more water anyway. Like, so I get so focused on like the result, or like going for a run, but I only want to go for a run if I like what my running clothes look like, and it's sunny and it's spring in New York and it's like a nice day and the playlist is right. And like, I set these outlandish expectations for myself that fucking are stupid. And then I never do it because I'm just like, oh, the shorts I want to wear are in the hamper and they're not clean. Or like, oh, it might rain in 30 minutes, so like, I'm not going to do it. Or, oh, I put on the song, like, oh, that's not the song. Like, I would find all these reasons to not do it. And then if I would do it and I didn't return with this mental reward of like being free because I ran through Prospect Park and it's spring and it's beautiful, I wouldn't feel like I did anything. And so now I said, fuck all of that. And I will answer your tomorrow question, then we can be done. But like, now it's like, I'm like, but this is inspired a lot by what would you do and what I read from you. So it's just like, I wanted to thank you for that, because it's like, for me, what's the, I was making no progress. I'm not, my brain is not going to be happy until like I my body's happier when I'm doing these things. And so like, if I'm neglecting my body because I have to have these six things right so I can have this beautiful Instagram running moment in the park, who gives a fuck? Like, so now I've reframed what I want my fitness routine to look like. It's just like, go downstairs, you pay all this rent to have this room with all this shit in it, use it. You know what I mean? Like, or what's the point of it? We can move and live somewhere smaller. Like, I have this stuff. Like, use it. I could use it if it's raining, if it's not, I could use it with like whatever I want. If someone's yelling at me, if I have a call. And then I also was like thinking, like, you're not gonna go outside and go for a run if you only have 15 minutes. That's like weird. Like, you're gonna like, you wanna like go out and do it or go for a bike ride around the block four times. But like, you can go to your home situation and be like, I'm gonna go on that exercise bike and just sprint for 15 minutes and go nuts. And get value out of it, right? Are you going to feel like emotionally, like you just solved all your life problems because you hit that zen state like you would on a run? No, but you're going to come upstairs sweaty and you're going to feel a lot better. But if that's all you did that day, at least you did something. And so I had found it in my life, and I'm sure it applies to my life a million other ways. I was just like self-sabotaging myself and not doing anything because I couldn't do it how I wanted to do it versus the value of making small things. And if I would have done that 15-minute sprint every single day for the last 5 years, I'd be exactly the weight I want to be. I'd feel exactly like I want to feel. The clothes would fit exactly to the point that I could put on the, I could do, you know, I could do whatever I want and not have any limitations if I would have figured that out then. So maybe it's a 45 thing. Maybe it's a midlife thing, like, you know, like you talk about, but it took me this long. Maybe it was just my wife just like mentally and emotionally slapping me in the face with her brain and saying, what the fuck, dude? But like, whatever it is, like, I figured out that it's just like, everything doesn't have to be, it's better to just make progress, even if it's small, than have this enormous. And that's so opposite than how my work goes musically. Like, I can't show up at a party and just show up for 50 minutes and think it's going to happen. Like, I have to give you 2 hours. I have to take you on this journey. I have to take you through all these things. But like, in my personal life, like, you know, you have to just knock it out and chip away at it. And so that, again, you know, one day you sent an email. I was having a bad day, and it was like what was going on. I had like a frozen shoulder, and my kid was like mad, and like everything was wrong. My wife had like work stuff going on, and it was like I was literally like using the bathroom before I weighed myself in the morning. And you had an email that was like, if your man reading this on the toilet right now or whatever, like this was like about 2 or 3 months ago. You sent that thing. It was probably maybe on a Sunday or something. Like I was like, oh fuck, that's me. Like, I'm literally like this dude, like, it made me laugh, actually. It made me laugh. Like, holy shit, I'm the person he's describing right now. And I'm like, I don't want to be that person. And so like, you know, it kind of like shocked me to like get it together a little bit better. Cause I don't want to be that.
That's look, I gotta believe that, Matt, when you watch people respond to your music, like when I hear stuff like that, it's just like so deeply emotional that, cause you never know. And again, I think we're all just guys. We're all just, again, we're husbands, we're dads, we're trying to, you know, we're trying to figure it out. Again, there is no perfect, you know, I'm like the majority of the days are perfectly imperfect. They're not, again, like my outfit's not ready to go. You know, it's not the best weather. It's not the perfect time to work out. It's not whatever. I'm looking at my calendar, you know, now and going, okay, where's the window? You know, I've got some, I don't want to do it at 4:30 today, but that's when my workout partner's available. And by the way, I've got a full schedule because I've been on the road for 3 weeks and we're going to do it. Is it going to be the best? No, it's absolutely not going to be the best, but we're going to get it done. But to your point, there will be more days where it is better in a way where you are taking that joyful, amazing run, wearing exactly what you want and the perfect weather and everything else. Yeah, we get to enjoy those big days, but we also define kind of what consistency looks like all the time too. Maybe it's 15 minutes one day, you know, maybe it's an hour another day. Maybe it's a day off that we have to take because of what our priorities are. You know?
Right. But you always feel better after you do that, which is the crazy part. So like, if you're having such a crazy, busy, hectic, shitty day that you can only find 15 minutes to work out, the minute you do those 15 minutes, all the stuff that was like rough and scary and annoying, it's still there, but you're looking at it slightly different, even just from those 15 minutes, which enables you to get so much more ahead of it that the next day you actually increase your odds of getting the hour you want. Because that's now you're approaching everything from a completely different perspective. And that's why that consistency is important.
That's what it is. I said preparation, consistency, accountability. We figure out what consistency looks like for us. We always feel better after we do it. We're back to the choices we make, you know, the actions we take. It's also another one of the reasons where I keep an hour. Like literally yesterday was a project with my older son who's home, was resetting my Calendly. I use Calendly for all my appointments and everything. And you know it because you were cool enough to respond to it. And it sets stuff that are there. But boundaries also. Yeah. I keep an hour in between every appointment. Why? Because I don't want to be in it. I got to get up from this chair. You know, I want to go see my dogs or see my kids, yeah, or see my wife or have a bite to eat. Or as you said, you don't drink enough water. I'm empty on my water, you know, right now, and take some time to kind of reset and recharge, you know, in there. And you just learn over time that when I was going back to back to back, it was frenetic. It was rushed. Even if it was the greatest stuff I wanted to do and the greatest person waiting for me one after the other, there's a capacity and a bandwidth that I had for it to be great before it started, yeah, to not return, for it to be hard and to be tiring. And then I wasn't given my best. So, you know, now we set things up with boundaries and parameters, you know, based on how we operate, probably like building a set to a degree. I don't know what that is like, you know, like when you go, but, right, you know, we have ways of putting things together that we figure out over time that work better for us, you know, or things.
Well, I'll tell you how, what it's like. Cause you just, there's a theory I have when I'm DJing a longer set. Right. And a lot of people think if you're a DJ that you need to just play hot shit the whole time. And that I have to tell you that that's ridiculous, because it's just like how you have to have your day. You have to have call, then you have to have downtime, and then you have to have meeting, and then downtime, and then you have workout, and then you have downtime. You have to like ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys, right? Because if you don't go lower, the peaks aren't peaks. The peaks are a flatline. Now you could flatline to death, but you could also flatline from success, right? If you only have peaks, whether they're good peaks or peaks you have to do, or just peaks of any type, right? Like it's, you get used to that. It's like an adrenaline rush. If you had an adrenaline rush 24/7, it wouldn't feel like an adrenaline rush. It would just feel crazy all the time. And so it's important as for life management to have that. It's important that for relationship management and for your partner. It's important. This applies to like dating. It applies to like everything. If you went on a date 24 hours a day when you're single, like everyone's going to look the same. Everyone's going to act the same. Like you're not even going to be able to recognize somebody's individual beauty without some like downtime or differentiation in that whole thing. And that's the same thing I feel as I plan my life. That's the same way I would plan a DJ set, which is like, if I only play 10 bangers in a row, like you get immune, you get numb. It's like why when you go to, when you go to like smell a candle at a store, then they make you smell something else. Because so you could smell the candle again, or like when you go to like taste wine, then you make you like drink water or do something else. You got to cleanse your palate. Mm-hmm. Whether you're doing it with these gaps on your Calendly or I'm doing it with music, like I'll give you two or three songs and I'll take you to here. And then I'm going to bring you back. I'm not going to take you all the way to like the beginning of the party or the end of the party, but I'm going to bring you down a little bit. And then I'm going to come back up and give you some more. And then I'm going to bring you back down a little bit, because you may want to go get a drink. You may have to pee. You may want to talk to that person you met. You might just be, you know, it's just also like, but from a sense perspective, like the impact of what I'm doing is not going to work.
It's so true. And it made me think about what you talked about getting into speaking and other stuff. And I've been really making a push into speaking, especially since the book came out and there've been opportunities.
Right. That's like, hugely important when you speak, you got to take people on that.
And right? I was like, I don't know how to do this and craft a keynote, you know, and a message. And how do we do this? And I was working with this group called Impact 11, and they're fantastic. And they were kind of giving this example of like, you know, the James Bond open, when you see the James Bond movie, like before the credits, before anything else, there's like this chase scene and it's energy. It's built. It's a James Bond open, you know, and then from there, you got to kind of level it out. You know, then the credits come in and the opening, you know, and you realize like the middle, you know, you can go a little bit. And then they were relating the end of it to like the fireworks show, like Macy's, you know, like you wait, you know, what's coming at the end, the big fireworks ending, you know, in there, but it really is creating that story arc. Like, where do you want the energy and the impact? And then where do you want things to maybe melt or sink in a little bit, and changing the intonation and what's going on? And then how do you finish? You know, how do you finish big and get the standing out? You know,
that's a great metaphor for life too, especially us middle age right now, right? Like we're like, I want to end. I want, when my life is done, hopefully many, many years in the future, I want that standing out. But like, I want to be able to like, you know, I've had all these, you know, I think about all the bad shit I went through the last few years. and it makes the great shit so much better. I think of all everything, and it's just like, you know. So yeah, I guess that's a great thesis for this entire chat, man. Like, it's just you just need all of that.
I think it is, man. I could talk to you for hours, and you got to come back for like a part two and everything else, because you know you're doing amazing stuff. You're totally real, completely relatable. Love everything about you. How do people find you also and follow you? Like, and what you're up to and get in contact with everything that you're doing.
Sure. My website is just very easy. It's mick.co, M-I-C-K.co. My Instagram is at mick, M-I-C-K. I'm not really active on Twitter anymore, but it's at I am mick. Twitter's a mess. But like, yeah, Instagram is basically like a visual diary of the blessed life that I'm fortunate to lead because of my wife and my kid and my career. I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, people could, you know, reach out through that. My email is mick@mick.co. So all these things are available on all the things. Connect with me on LinkedIn, whatever. Like, all these things are, I'm self-managed, you know, I'm self-managed, self-marketed. I'm a team of one, probably similar to you in a lot of ways. It's like, I eat what I kill and I reap what I sow. But I don't even think that makes sense, but like, I just like, you know, my life is my life. And so the more I put into it, the more I get out of it. And so like people sometimes get surprised that like my booking agent is me and my publicist is me and all of these things, but I really wouldn't have it any other way because it's just like, you get so much interesting stuff that happens from it. So yeah, when people reach out to me, it's just like you, it's me. And you know, we start the process from there. And I love what I get to do. I love to be able to help people in any of the ways. You know, and it's cool. And my cat is like, it's time for lunch. He's crying over there. He's 19, so when he's hungry, I gotta go because he's 19. He's a 19-year-old cat. He's like, I run the house, dude.
I feel you, man. I absolutely love this. I don't say that lightly at all. One name, guys. Everything. He's Mick. He's at Mick. Okay. You can't make it any simpler than that. You can absolutely find him. Go give him a follow. Cannot wait to have you back. Anything I can do to help support you in any way, I am happy to do it. And quintessential midlife male, husband, father, DJ, style maven, advisor, investor. Like the list goes long.
Hello, bald man.
Fellow bald guy with a beard, sizing us all up, making sure like we're getting it right, as right as we possibly can. So give him a follow, check everything out. And guys, if you like what you hear on the Midlife Male podcast, please 5-star rating, leave us a good review. This stuff really helps to move the podcast up the charts, keep the Midlife Male movement growing. Head over to midlifemail.com. And you can subscribe to the newsletter every Sunday in your inbox. Maybe it makes an impact like it did to Mick sitting there also.
Read it on your toilet. Read it on your toilet with your aloe cottonelle wipe. And just like breathe.
There it is. Make sure you get the podcast every week too. And if you've got suggestions, questions, advice, anything you want to know about, I am reachable as well. I am the guy who's going to respond to it. Greg@midlifemail.com. Until next week, we are out of here. Thank you so much, Mick.
Thank you.
If you're interested in coaching and taking this conversation deeper so that you can achieve your personal and professional goals, be sure to head over to midlifemail.com and check out the Work With Me page to explore options.